All right. So the next case for the morning is 10-1549, Estate of Dorothy Davis versus Wells Fargo. Mr. Spielberger.
Good morning, Judge. I'm Bill Spielberger, appearing on behalf of the estate of Dorothy Davis. Judge, this case has to do with fraud, consumer fraud, deceptive business practices. What has happened to the late Mrs. Davis has happened to people throughout the country, as we're all aware, people who have lost their homes as a result of subprime predatory loans. What makes this case somewhat perhaps unique, at least different, is that Mrs. Davis does not allege that she was a victim of a subprime loan or a predatory loan. It's been proved. It's been proved in a court of law. In the county of Kankakee a couple of years ago. What this case is about is how the owner and servicer of this predatory loan, before, during, and after the events in Kankakee, attempted repeatedly to try to get Mrs. Davis to pay to them fees and costs that had already been proved to be based upon fraud. The case, again, is about fraud, consumer fraud, deceptive business practices.
Mr. Spielberger, let me ask you. Mrs. Davis was represented through this, at least in recent years, when she was pursuing her remedies in the state courts, correct?
By me. For 12 years, Judge.
Okay. And during that time, I understand that you think what the banks and servicers were doing was improper and unethical. What was the harm that the law recognizes? Because it's hard, for example, to see reliance on a fraud claim here. Yes, if you and others are telling Ms. Davis they're not entitled to collect on these, we've resisted successfully in the foreclosure action, what's the harm?
She lost her home.
She did lose her home?
She lost her home. The title's in the name of a Wells Fargo. Or whoever is the actual owner.
What happened in the foreclosure?
It was dismissed.
Foreclosure action was dismissed.
The foreclosure action,
yeah.
That is, there was no, there was still the mortgage. They dismissed the foreclosure action. They did not dismiss the underlying loan.
Right. Okay, well,
so she didn't lose the home.
She lost title to the house. The title.
You mean giving up title as part of the mortgage?
No.
Or something else? I'm frankly confused because I thought the state court judge refused to foreclose on the mortgage.
They refused the foreclosure action, but years before, perhaps 10 years before, the title she signed under duress this mortgage at her kitchen table in Kankakee in I believe 1998. As soon as she signed that mortgage was transferred to another entity called Provident Bank. They, in turn, at some time, apparently sold it to Wells Fargo as a part of a package of securitized loans. Right now, as far as I know, that the ownership of that mortgage is in the hands of investors in that securitized loan.
Okay, but how is that loss of her home? How is that loss of her home?
During the last year, she has not been able to sell the home. She has not been able, because of she doesn't have title. She hasn't been able to buy another home because she doesn't have clear title to her previous loan. She has no credit. She hasn't been able to live in the house because she has no credit to make necessary improvements.
I'm totally confused.
Yes.
So there's still a mortgage lien on this house?
Yes.
Did anybody ask to have the lien removed in light of the results of the
I have for 12
where
years.
It was found that the mortgage was secured by fraud?
Well, that's, Judge, that's partially the point. Even after this two cases in Kankakee, even after that Wells Fargo still attempted to collect on the mortgage.
I guess we'll have to ask Wells Fargo's a lawyer about that.
I thought the state court judge was asked, in essence, by you to declare that the mortgage was not enforceable at all.
Yes, and he
refused, right? because the fact that there may, I mean, the problem, look, frankly, the problem is there were some charges. It was a, you know, it was a predatory loan. I know you proved that.
Yes.
Nevertheless, Mrs. Davis also got some benefit from the loan. Maybe the repairs to her house turned out to be shoddy. I don't know. But there was some exchange of value in that transaction, wasn't there?
Well, there was, but it was minimal exchange.
Well,
value.
Okay, that's where the debate comes in.
Yes.
You know, I know you said, okay, there are certain charges that were not reasonably tied to the value provided and so on. But in this kind of a shoddy transaction, it's lopsided. That's why you were able to win in your claim against the original parties. But that doesn't necessarily, I mean, the ordinarily the remedy for that would be rescission.
Okay. It would.
Which would require both parties, in essence, to give back the value they received or its equivalent. And that hasn't happened, and you haven't sought it, have you?
Boy, I sought it. I have. 10 years ago, in this courthouse, 10 years ago.
You dismissed that voluntarily, right?
More or less. Well, we...
You dismissed it voluntarily, correct? And then pursued remedies in state court.
Because of statute of limitations, that's right, Judge. Yeah. But to go back to your point about the harm that was done, I want to emphasize that she ended up being homeless because of this loan. It's not that she enjoyed the benefits of the house. She had no house. She couldn't live in the house. She couldn't sell it. She couldn't buy another. She couldn't rent it.
Why couldn't she live
in
the house?
Because of, there's a long history, but it goes back to she had a loan before she got the loan that it's now a subject here, but to repair the roof. The roof wasn't repaired. A couple of years ago during some real bad winters that we had where pipes burst and so on, the pipes burst, the water came in, it made the home unlivable. And the deterioration of our neighborhood made it unlivable as well.
Well, that has no causal connection to the actions alleged here against these defendants. There's no causal link there. Pre-existing disrepair of the house and the deterioration of the neighborhood. I mean, is that...
Well, it does under our claim under the Fair Housing Act. I mean... we say that we claim, this is what we wanted to go to the jury about, by the way, Judge, is that we have evidence that we submitted in reference to the Wells Fargo's motion for summary judgment that there's been a pattern in practice of targeting inner-city minority neighborhoods for these predatory loans by Wells Fargo and by Litton Loan. And as a result, those neighborhoods have suffered the consequences and have become, which we know, basically unlivable, as it did for Mrs. Davis.
Was there evidence that Wells Fargo was complicit in the origination of this loan?
Not the origination.
You're referring
to this mortgage, whatever, Express, whatever that company was, and then it went to somebody else, and then it was bundled up and went to Wells Fargo.
No, we've never made the claim that they were present at the origination of the loan.
I thought you just said, though, that Wells Fargo was involved in a whole number of cases where it was
what they've been involved in
predatory loans to people who were disadvantaged.
What we claim is that in our response to Wells Fargo's motion for summary judgment is that there have been a pattern and practice of making homes unavailable under the Fair Housing Act based upon their targeting inner city neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods for loans that are designed to fail. And that's what's happened.
Is that the evidence that the Judge Aspin struck because Smith and Bianchi's affidavits were improper?
Yes.
Okay. So is there any doubt that that evidence was improperly submitted prior to the time that the judgment was entered?
Yes, Judge. We strongly said that it was properly submitted with the affidavits, but
unsigned, unnotarized, undated.
I'm presenting to the court as an officer of the court that I submitted those signed, notarized affidavits.
When? before or after judgment?
I got a call from the judge's clerk asking me to bring them over because we had relied upon the signatures that were submitted electronically. I have 1 minute. I'll be anxious to respond to the decisions that Wells Fargo is going to be presenting to you right now. But again, I just want to emphasize in these last seconds that what we are asking for is a chance to go back to court to bring these contested issues to a jury for them to determine whether or not the allegations against Wells Fargo for trying to collect on a known predatory adjudicated loan are in violation of different state and federal causes of action. Thank you.
Mr. Noonan.
Thank you. James Noonan appearing for the defendants. And may it please the court, I think the court has already expressed an invitation for me to address factual dispute in the record. Ms. Davis and the estate of Ms. Davis has not lost her home. The mortgage at issue here still encumbers that property. To date, I have no idea whether or not the current holder is seeking to foreclose that or not. But the fact of the matter is there has not been a completed foreclosure.
The current holder is Wells Fargo is not the current holder?
Wells Fargo is, as far as I know, Wells Fargo is the current holder of the mortgage.
So Wells Fargo is not seeking to foreclose on the mortgage?
That's correct.
But yes. I don't know. I thought when I looked at this, maybe you can tell me where I went wrong, but I thought when you lost in the foreclosure action in state court, could not foreclose on it, that would lead to some sort of unbundling of this mortgage, maybe some payment back and forth, whatever it would be, but that mortgage would be off. Would no longer be a lien on the property. Because wasn't that the finding of the jury?
Judge,
this was a loan that was procured by fraud.
There are two state court decisions that are implicated in this case. The first is the decision by the jury in the action that Ms. Davis brought against Mortgage Express, which was tried to a jury with no one representing the defendant in that action. And as far as the record is concerned, the only information we know is that there was a verdict entered against that defendant. It is my contention that the statements and arguments by Ms. Davis' counsel here that this was a fraudulent loan or a predatory loan or that a loan that contained fraudulent fees is not supported anywhere in the record. The only thing we have is a verdict against a defendant.
On what sort of a claim?
Predatory lending? I don't know. Fraud?
Illinois Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act?
It's a fraud claim against the Mortgage Express. It could be for their actions or representations to them. I don't know.
But you can't generally get anything better in an assignment than the person had to offer you an assignment.
That is correct. That is correct. But the point is there was no finding in that case that the loan was invalid, nor was there a finding in the foreclosure action that the loan was invalid. I think what this court needs to bear in mind is that the decision in the Kankakee foreclosure action was a decision on a trial where the plaintiff had the burden to prove its entitlement to foreclose. The court in that case found that the plaintiff did not meet its burden, and expressly, if you look at the document 100-8, which is the court's memorandum decision, the court said that the witnesses failed to provide sufficient proof and information of certain fees. And it was for that reason that the court declined the entry of the judgment of foreclosure and expressly and specifically held that the mortgage and note are unaffected by this ruling. So there was no finding by any state court that there were predatory fees, predatory charges, or that this loan was invalid in any way.
Why did the jury give her $136,000?
Frankly, no idea.
You're saying there was no evidence about this, but we do have this on primarily on 12B6 motion, and we've got allegations in the relevant amended complaint about the reasons for that decision, namely the fraudulent charges.
Yes.
So without we never got to the stage of having to develop the full record on that.
No, that is true, Your Honor. But the claims, if the amended complaint in this case, a close look at the amended complaint deals exclusively with origination issues, and with the exception of a single allegation that refers to the defendant's attempt to collect on paragraph 5 of the amended complaint.
I'm looking at paragraph 55.
Yes, those are paragraph 55 is an origination term that they're offering.
Plaintiffs are now demanding that she repay the loan and costs which have been found to be illegal. Now, that doesn't run into a statute of limitations problem.
No, that is true, Judge.
Okay.
I concede that.
So we're not talking only about origination issues.
No, Judge, there are, the way I've been able to assess the defendant's allegations with respect to post-origination issues are effectively the defendant's attempt to collect on this debt and what counsel has articulated in his brief, the defendant's refusal to pay the judgment. Now, with respect to the first
point, they're obviously not required to pay the judgment. But in terms of, now we see a lot of Fair Debt Collection Practices Act cases, for example, in which an effort to collect a loan after a finding of fraud in connection with that loan would be a pretty strong case, frankly. And that's what you all are accused of doing. I know there's been no citation to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and maybe it doesn't apply for one reason or another here. Maybe the statute of limitations has run on that because it's shorter. But I think, frankly, I'm pretty troubled by demands that Ms. Davis repay the mortgage as if nothing had happened after Wells Fargo knew about the judgment concerning the original problems with the loan.
Well, yeah, Judge, except that, again, the Wells Fargo didn't participate in that case. Wells Fargo didn't...
No, but you were told about it, right?
Yes.
We at least have that alleged.
Well, we were told that there was a verdict entered against Mortgage Express for $165,000.
Mm-hmm. And the basis for the verdict.
Illinois consumer fraud.
Right.
That doesn't send up some red flags about trying to collect on that same mortgage?
Judge, I don't submit it does. I submit that the holder of that security would have the opportunity to defend those claims and those charges as if they were brought in the party in action. And I will submit, Judge, that the record
sure,
also
you're entitled to the opportunity to defend, but are you entitled to proceed? I mean, aren't you proceeding at some risk after knowledge that the origination of the loan that was ultimately assigned to you was poisoned by fraud?
Judge, a mortgage foreclosure proceeding is, in essence, a breach of contract action. The plaintiff files a claim and is obligated under the Foreclosure Act to prove up its claim and its entitlement to all the fees and costs. That was what mm-hmm. happened in the state court. In fact, in the state court, the Wells Fargo, maybe heeding the concern with the result of the verdict against Mortgage Express, declined to seek those costs in that foreclosure. In other words, it reduced the claim that it was seeking to take into consideration.
Do we have that in this record?
Yeah, Judge, it's in the trial brief submitted in the Kankakee case, which is document 100-7. The affidavit of Robert Haney, which is document 104-1, where they basically, he goes to, the plaintiff's attorney in that case goes to trial in the foreclosure action, and the plaintiff, i.e. Wells Fargo, elects to not ask for certain fees For the obvious reason that they don't think they can prove them. So, in effect, the concerns that you have were addressed in the Kankakee action. So to claim that by asking for fees that you're contractually entitled to, and then to not pursue them because you can't think you can recover them in the case, how does that implicate a fraud concern?
Well, you're not limited. The plaintiff here is not limited to what happened in the foreclosure action.
That's true.
In terms of efforts to collect, efforts to collect may count outside of court.
That's true. But again, going back to our initial point that Your Honor made, was that at the end, how was Ms. Davis damaged by these attempts to collect a debt?
Well, that's a different problem from whether it was right to try to collect from her and in compliance with the law to try to collect from her.
Judge, I submit that Wells Fargo, who was not party to that Mortgage Express proceeding, was within its right to try to collect all the amounts that it felt under the contract and under the Illinois Mortgage Foreclosure Act it was entitled to collect. And again, the record shows that it went to trial and did not put in evidence in other words, it reduced its claim by some fees. And frankly, it is unclear exactly what fees they are, but they did not go to judgment on the full amount of their claim. Your Honor, I'd like to talk briefly with a few remaining minutes I have left to address the summary judgment issue on the Fair Housing Act claim. I submit that the allegations and the theory of the Fair Housing Act claim advanced by Ms. Davis are not recognizable given these circumstances and the facts pled in this case. Most of the fair housing claims by a plaintiff are time barred. But to the extent that they aren't, the plaintiff's failure to satisfy the judgment against Mortgage Express certainly does not implicate the concerns under the Fair Housing Act. But leaving these issues aside, no evidence. There is simply the evidence that was submitted was the district court was absolutely correct in striking those affidavits and judgments. They were not timely notarized. They were not notarized, timely submitted, signed, sworn, verified, nor did they have anything to do with this loan, the origination of this loan, the servicing of this loan. They had no knowledge of this loan. They dealt with loans that were originated in different jurisdictions. They dealt with loans that the different types of loans, home equity loans versus purchase money loans. So in that sense, the court was right both procedurally and to strike the affidavits, given that they weren't in proper form or in compliance with Rule 56E or 28 U.S.C. 1746. And substantively, the court in its Rule 60B order took a look past the deficiencies to see if there was any merit to the underlying affidavits and rightly concluded that there wasn't. Judge, I believe that the district court was correct in dismissing all of the claims on the motion to dismiss. I believe that the district court was likewise correct in entering summary judgment on the Fair Housing Act matter. And if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Mr. Spielberger. We have 4 minutes remaining.
There's been a lot of confusion throughout this case at all levels, but one of the confusions I think that still exists is fraud that might have occurred or did occur has been adjudicated as occurring at the origination of the loan, and then fraud that occurred or deceptive business practices that occurred in the last years of Mrs. Davis's life when there were attempts to collect on that loan. My understanding from reading the dismissal by the district court is that the district court looked primarily at events that occurred at the origination of the loan, and found that most of the causes of action were untimely because those events occurred 10 years ago, where our appeal to you is that the events in question have occurred at the within the last years when there was attempts to collect on the loan. Based upon that confusion, that's one of the principal reason why we're asking the case to be remanded for trial.
Mr. Spielberger, let me go back to a problem I was trying to raise earlier. Frankly, I think the district court was right about statute of limitations to the extent claims are based on the origination of the loan. It was long ago. This case came much later. Different statutes, but all had run. But I'm going to your fraud claim in the complaint, where you say in 56, Mrs. Davis was deceived by defendants, justifiably relied on their willful misrepresentations, and was induced to rely on them to her extreme detriment. Now, part of those allegations in the preceding paragraph refer to the demands that she repay the loan and costs that have been found to be illegal. Where's the reliance? How could she be relying on those demands when you are fighting for her and telling her they're not entitled to these?
She didn't rely. She didn't make payments.
Okay.
For one, she didn't.
I can imagine the distress and anxiety that could be caused by having this kind of a dispute. But where's the reliance that you need for a fraud claim?
That requires some change in position.
Well, it does. It's a good question. I can tell you about how she... here's what she would often ask me during the last years of her life is, how can it be that we can go to have a jury trial where they say that I was defrauded and that I should receive $156,000, and then turn around and have Wells Fargo demand almost the same amount of money from me?
The lawyer's answer to that question is that Wells Fargo was not a party to your state court suit. That may not be very satisfactory to Mrs. Davis, but you didn't win a case against Wells Fargo in the state court on that.
That's correct.
So, okay.
And there may have been a remedy for rescission available.
I'm sorry?
There may well have been a remedy for rescission available that was not...
There was, but this does go back to the origination. She, if you recall... when she signed these papers on her kitchen table, she was not given advanced notice about what those papers were. She was not given a chance to read those papers. And also, she was not given copies of those papers. Normally,
that's all res judicata. I mean, we know that. That was established in the underlying action in state court.
Yes, but normally, the action for rescission of the contract is time-limited to the time that you receive the alleged contract, and that time had long expired. So that was one of the problems with the rescission. I can tell you that for years we tried to settle this matter where she would be given a new mortgage, one that she could afford, one that was not based upon these deceptive, padded, predatory fees, but that didn't work.
What's the status of this thing right now? She passed away. Who lives in the
house? A year ago.
What's the fair market value of the house in this deteriorating that you tell us about?
You know, this loan was for something like $85,000.
$87,000. $32,000 of service charges.
But soon after that, there was a fair market appraisal of about $20,000. In the last years, that home is unlivable, and I doubt if anyone could get $5,000 for it. It's a... This is what so bothered Mrs. Davis, that she was an excellent housekeeper and kept that house up as well as she could. That was partially why she was susceptible to these claims that she needed these home improvements. She was not able to make those home improvements to make those homes livable during the last years of her life.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.